Hey guys, welcome to Bright Owl Politics. My name is Ariana Mendez. Thank you for tuning in to this bonus episode. If you're new to the show, I'm a Cuban-American attorney from South Florida and a conservative political analyst. So we wanted to pop in here for this bonus episode just to discuss the recent landmark case from the Supreme Court. Supreme Court has extended federal protections to the LGBT community in the workplace. So we want to discuss that and do a deep dive of the personal, political, and legal ramifications of that Supreme Court decision. So we invited Carlos Fernandez. He's a friend of the show. He was here on the show a few weeks ago, and we had a great talk about what it's like to be a gay conservative. So he is on the show today to tell us how he feels about the recent Supreme Court case. And we deep dive into other issues as well. We talk about Winston Churchill, Disney, censorship of Gone with the Wind by HBO Max, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, the whole spectrum of topics. So it was a very interesting and fun show. Hope you enjoy. Hey, Carlos, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
So glad you're back. A lot to talk about today. A very big day for the LGBT community. So tell me, how do you feel?
It was a huge emotional sense of pride and happiness, actually. Glad that the Supreme Court voted its way. I read all the opinions. I'm super proud of, especially Brett Kavanaugh. I'm very, very, very proud of him.
What is the biggest takeaway from that opinion? Obviously, it's a landmark case. It extends anti-discrimination protections to the LGBT community. We had President Trump's first nominee to the Supreme Court, Justice Gorsuch, write the majority opinion. Justice Roberts joined him as the other conservative justice for that 6-3 opinion with the other liberal justices. What is the biggest takeaway for you from this decision?
I think the biggest takeaway for me personally was the overwhelming gladness of just seeing conservatives understanding and realizing the plight of a minority and actually providing that minority the protections they deserve. Obviously, I have very biased opinions about this because it affects me.
Right.
But on the flip side of the coin, you know, it's people think dissenting opinions aren't important. Dissenting opinions are a majority of legal history, and you know this in particular, Ariana. I think that everyone understands that a dissenting opinion, it can be as important as the majority opinion, because dissenting opinions tend to either evolve over time to majority opinions, or they make a very, very impressive commentary to the majority opinion that is later accepted. And I think that Kavanaugh's dissenting opinion and the specific words he used in defense of those of the LGBTQ community should be extraordinarily proud of him. These are people that we, you know, the left and the media have told us that these people are anti-gay, they're anti-abortion, they're the worst kind of right-winged conservative judges to ever be placed on the court. And today we really saw that that's not the case. That is not the truth, that the conservative movement is a lot more broad than we think.
It's always interesting when you live long enough to be able to see the progression of an issue. And you go back 10 years ago and gay marriage was a left-right issue. If you were a liberal, you supported it. If you were a conservative, you were against it. Flash forward to 2020, it seems like those lines are a lot more fluid now. It's interesting because you have conservative justices. Why do you think that in 2020, there has been that progression towards that more receptive attitude towards the gay community from the right?
I think that the conservative right has now changed its defining characteristics on social issues because they are now aligning itself more and more with, and you know this to be true as far as how I think, I'm not a huge libertarian, nor do I aspire to be one, but I think the conservative movement has really, really made strides in trying to accept that kind of mentality that at the end of the day, government is there to create very limited amount of rules and everyone is supposed to play by those rules and we have to all live in heart and we all live in competition to one another, economically speaking, so we can strive for a better livelihood for each other, for individuality. So in terms like that, I think that this decision broadcasts our original intent as conservatives to not allow the government to determine and protect those from other private individuals to determine who is not eligible and is eligible to maintain in their own employment based on secondary factors like sexuality. And I think that's incredibly important, because for conservatives, I truly believe that it's not the basis of your sexuality or your race or your sex. It is the content of your character. Quote another famous Republican.
And Martin Luther King, one of the greats. I definitely agree with you. I will tell you, I'm going to supporter of LGBT rights, as a supporter of As Your Friend. I am so happy today. I think it was a great day. On a personal level, I think that was the right decision. I'm going to take that hat off for a minute, okay?
I wouldn't expect you to do anything otherwise.
So putting that hat down, and I'm going to put my legal hat on. In law school, we sometimes talk about the tipsy coachman. And tipsy coachman came from a poem in the 1900s that basically, in a nutshell, there was a coachman and he was a little tipsy, but he somehow still made his way home and nothing bad happened to the occupant. Everybody, unfortunately, when the tipsy coachman doctrine is used in legal discussions, it's used to explain when you reach a correct conclusion but for the wrong reasons. Okay, so in this situation, I'm going to apply the tipsy coachman doctrine to this situation, because as much as I like the conclusion, I don't like the way that we reach that conclusion. With all due respect, Justice Neil Gorsuch, and I'm a big fan, I think that this is setting a bad precedent, because this, in my view, is judicial activism. And I'm a stickler for separation of power. I'm a stickler for respecting what the legislator has drafted. And I believe in this situation, there was blessing of judicial activism by the conservative justices. And instead of saying, we believe that this should be the correct course of action, but this is not our place to decide that, they decided to take the bull by the horns and legislate from the bench. That really worries me, because now conservative jurisprudence is embracing wholeheartedly that type of judicial activism. And for me, any type of judicial activism from the left or the right is dangerous. Your thoughts?
Yes, yes. I mean, honestly, there is a contextualism and textualization of the Constitution that needs to be respected. And I'm the first to tell you that agreeably so. I would have preferred such a move by the Supreme Court to be made by a legislator in Congress. Without a doubt, do I agree that should have been the course of act. And do I think that this is judicial activism? By its definition, it is. I mean, you look at the majority opinion and they're using the same arguments that the left judges of the Supreme Court for decades. I mean, the idea that this is a slippery slope, and this slippery slope is one that we're condoning momentarily. And the problem is that it'll be used against us 10 times fold when the other side gains control.
In other words, listeners, go out and vote in November to keep that conservative majority. Wink,
correct.
Wink.
But it's true. I mean, honestly, like, for example, it's the same. It's almost, and I said this to you through text, it's like, for example, when President Trump made an emergency, he basically called the border a state of emergency in order to fund his border wall after 2 months of trying to negotiate with Democrats and no consideration from them to make any kind of full faith discussion on the topic. So I agree with what the end results are. I do not agree with how that situated and how that evolved. That being said, I'm not going to tell you right now, let's defund the border.
right.
So it is a situation where we as conservatives really have to think about what are our goals? What are our concepts? What is underlyingly, so I believe me, I'm the first to say that I hear you, I understand, I for once do not agree with that contextualization of the written text by evolutionary terms that the founders nor the writers understood at the time, for history along with law should be understood by the time it was written. That's why we have Congress, which Congress is supposed to update these laws so they reflect the society at large. Unfortunately, Congress hasn't done its job in over 40 years. Well, I would say the last 20 years.
Here's the thing. When this type of power grab happens, and when I say power grab, I'm not just singling out the judicial branch. When the legislator does it and when the executive does it, it degrades the separation of power. And there's a reason why the separation of power exists. Our founders, in their vast wisdom, understood that if you give too much power to one branch of government, it will take over all the other ones.
I agree with that. I'm just saying that there's a power vacuum at the moment. Legislature hasn't passed any major reformation to any major institutions in over 20 years. The legislature hasn't done it.
So let me ask you this from a political perspective. Do you think that if the court has said, no, this is a legislator's job, we cannot legislate from the bench, that would have ignited a lot of interest and passions to go and vote in November?
Because had the Supreme Court voted the opposite way, I would have still defended the justices for making that kind of consideration to the law.
But do you think that that takes away a talking point?
For them, without question. I mean, yeah. Like I even said to, let's discuss, just forget about how Gorsuch came to his conclusion. I'm going to speak verbatim Kavanaugh's words in his dissent, because I think that what I need everyone to understand, that a conservative judge said this, a conservative judge that everyone thought was against any minority issues and wanted to maintain the status quo as far as anyone else is concerned, here comes a conservative justice that actually understands the plight. He says, and I quote, "Notwithstanding my concern about the court's transgression of the Constitution's separation of powers, it is appropriate to acknowledge the important victory achieved today by gay and lesbian Americans. Millions of gay and lesbian Americans have worked hard for many decades to achieve equal treatment in fact and in law. They have exhibited extraordinary vision, tenacity, and grit, battling often steep odds in the legislative and judicial arenas, not to mention in their daily lives. They have advanced powerful policy arguments and can take pride in today's result." And end of quote. That to me speaks volumes. It tells me that we, the right, are not evil. We are not the racist, bigoted, bug arts that everyone thinks we are. We understand the plight. We understand the need. We understand the emotions, and we are behind you.
Were you surprised?
I was not. I certainly wasn't expecting this type of decision. Certainly. I thought that if it was going to be an agreeable side, it would be on the side of like a 5-4 decision. To have a 6-3 decision, that in itself is quite powerful.
What about other members of your community, your friends? What are they saying about this?
Mostly good. Some, the surprising thing is that I said it to my sister, and my sister told me, "I thought we already had these rights." I was like, "Yes, on a district and state level, in some states, you have these rights, but not uniformity throughout the country. So this solidifies and codifies that law to all 50 states." So I got, kind of explained to me what happened. Actually, my family didn't even understand what happened. So I had to explain that. As far as like my gay friends, some gay friends were super excited. And then I had other gay, I had other more, I call them militant Democrats, who basically said, "Well, that's just one issue, and it's really the Democrats who achieved that." And I was like, "I have no idea what you're talking about." "I really don't understand what you mean by that. I understand it's a first step, but acknowledge that it's a step."
Let me ask you this. What do you make of the controversy involving J.K. Rowling and the transgender community? What's your opinion on that?
I'm probably going to get a lot of hate mail for this. Okay, so I feel, like I said in your show...
First off, explain to our audience a little bit what was the controversy.
Sure. So J.K. Rowling made a comment about transgendered people not really being... I mean, because I don't understand, all I got was rage on the internet. But I think that she said something to the effect that transgendered women aren't women, they are of, and women's rights don't need to be aligned with the same rights as transgendered women's rights are, or something to that effect. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Specifically, she was addressing, there had been a post, and they referred to people who menstruate, and she objected to the use of the word people, because in traditional standards, females are the only one, are usually the people that menstruate. So she objected with the word people being used in that context.
Well, thank you for correcting me though. Now that I know that, even more reason why I'm going to get hate mail for my next comment. I think that what people have to understand is that women's rights and what women have done in the last 100 years to gain the same access and abilities to be equal to men, and there's still ways to go for some women. That plight, by including someone brand new to that plight that doesn't, that didn't fight the fight that women had, is to be it's a little condescending to the women that came before them, you know what I mean? So as far as that's concerned, it is possible to be a feminist and not be 100% open and available to the transgendered community. It's okay, because again, there are generational gaps in all of this understanding. Transgendered as a situation, political situation, is completely new. We are still, and most of us, I think, are at the majority. I don't mean the people who actually know transgendered people, but I mean the majority is still grappling with understanding this minority and getting more access to them. And just like every minority that, you know, is new or wasn't new but oppressed or what have you, the more exposure we have to them and the more conversations we have to them, the more understanding we have of them and the more access they will receive. But to jump...
In your opinion, are trans women women?
Well, that's a complicated answer. I think if you consider gender to be an identity, then they are women. If you believe gender is God-given by right of virtue of birth, then no, they are not. And I'm somewhere in the middle. I don't want to make an assertion of either or yet, because I do believe gender is a cultural determination of a, because for example, boys and girls live together, but they also have societal pressures that are put onto them that are completely different from each other. So there's a societal understanding of what gender is, and there's obviously the gender that we're born with. Now, can I bridge those two it's hard, because if you do so, you are making an argument that's both self-eating. It's like the tail, it's like the snake eating its own tail. You're making an argument that doesn't really exist yet. So as far as that's concerned, if you limit gender based on biology, I will say no. If you limit gender, if you open gender up to identity, I say yes.
Well said. And what concerns you about the current rhetoric of the LGBT community concerning attacking those that may disagree with them, specifically in this case with J.K. Rowling? She received a lot of hate, and she had been a very beloved figure in the LGBT community. So
yeah, if J.K. Rowling was listening to this, J.K. Rowling, I'm the first to defend you. I think that people misconstrue, and this is not something that I take lightly. There is knowledge and wisdom that comes with age and generations that simply the newer ones do not understand, will not appreciate just because they're the new one. I don't think someone should be at fault for making a claim, and you should be defended for making that claim no matter who you are. As I said in your previous podcast, I've always said that anyone able to articulate an argument and defend that argument should be respected for that argument. So J.K. Rowling, I respect you. I think that you've given us one of the best stories known to the 21st century, at least in movie form. But regardless of that, and it's okay that not everyone agrees with you, J.K. Rowling, because not everyone should, and it's okay to disagree. But it's not okay to bully either.
Sounds like you'll still be watching the movies, no problem.
Oh, I already started. HBO Max, by the way, if you're listening, great. Thank you for putting all the Harry Potter movies.
Okay, you just mentioned HBO Max. Let's talk about HBO Max. You saw that they're going to add a introduction by a black scholar to the beginning of Gone with the Wind to put it in its historical and racial context.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for Columbus to get his. I am the first to say that everyone, if you feel like Gone with the Wind insults you and it oppresses you, then I think that you should really look into the age of when that was written and the age of when that was produced. It was actually forward-thinking in its time. For God's sakes, the first African-American Academy Award winner came from it. It's not a movie that, yes, it's going to show stereotypical things that happened at that time, just like any movie. I mean, you could watch a movie from the 90s that has people saying, well, you know, gays suck. Am I going to be insulted because I watch a movie that says gays suck from the 90s?
So maybe I'm an old timer, Carlos. Maybe I'm getting old and I've officially crossed over into the old people category.
She said it. She's older than me. She said it. I want it for the record.
But when I was young, in my day, movies used to be conversation starters.
Sure.
For Pete's sake, they used to show us movies when we were in elementary, middle, and high school to illustrate a point, to start discussions, to emphasize complexities. And now, we cannot even allow people to consume material, films, books, without criticizing it through modern lens. Now we want to basically censor films and books in order to make us feel better about ourselves. Instead of just letting people consume the material, have those discussions within their families, with their children, and let people make those determinations. Apparently, people cannot be trusted to do that anymore.
Well, if it were up to Democrats, you wouldn't be trusted with an opinion. You wouldn't be trusted with talking to people or being around people or anything of that nature, because if you don't adhere to their litmus test of being who they, what they believe in, then you're castigated against. So this is very troublesome, right? I mean, you're looking at these things, and I studied history. I was told this is the most perfect historian. The best historian is the unbiased, is the historian that goes back into that time, reads more than anything in life about that time period, and produces an unbiased reporting of what happened based on what the scope of the mindset that happened within it. So when you read these things, it is, you know, you just have to realize that, hey, listen, this is something that happened ages ago. Should we just erase or criticize or delete it simply because it doesn't fit with our moral understanding of the world now? How do you think progress is made?
But it's frustrating because this is not isolated to Gone with the Wind.
No, you watched Three Caballeros, and they had to do a disclaimer that, by the way, for anyone that doesn't know, Three Caballeros is a cartoon movie that was by Disney Films, and they portrayed the typical Latin American communities, Mexico, Brazil, and America through the cartoon figures of Donald Duck and his two cousins.
There's also issues with other films that we also are trying to erase from cinematic history. The characterization of Native Americans in Disney's Peter Pan is often attacked. Of course, Pocahontas is often attacked for its content, and several others. So it's no longer, okay, let's enjoy something for what it is as a product of its time. Now we want to hold these films accountable to 2020 standards.
I think that if you want, I mean, we're just, whenever someone wants to limit history, my viewpoint is you're fishing really hard to trying to show that there was discrimination and that there's this, and there was discrimination, obviously, at the time, because the discrimination wasn't so much discrimination, it was codified law and it was codified culture. And by don't destroy that history to teach people, you actually want to bring that up so people can understand how we got here, what progress we made to get here.
Well, this lunacy is also what's happening on the streets of America right now when they're defacing these monuments. Either, and it's not just the Confederate monuments they're going after. They're going after Christopher Columbus. They're going after our founding fathers. No monument is safe. If it's that of a white man, that monument is in peril of being defaced by these rioters.
Believe me, I saw what happened to the Winston Churchill statue in London, and I was enraged because I just feel like there's a lack of information or something. I don't understand. Everyone needs to like sit back and read a good book about history and realize what strides we made and what these men that you so-called racist men have done for society, because oftentimes you'll be quite surprised. Winston Churchill, if it wasn't for Winston Churchill, England would be speaking German right now. So would Western Europe. And by the way, there were concentration camps for those that the Nazi Germans didn't like. So we can all say, we can all safely say that if it wasn't for Winston Churchill, there would have been situations where minorities were actually killed.
It's interesting because, you know, Winston Churchill was quite quite a hurricane of a man. He very powerful personality, very strong character. There's something about this whole situation, somebody trying to deface his monument, his statue. I think he would get a kick out of it. I mean, this is the man who said, you have enemies good. That means you've stood up for something in your life.
Well, I also think he would have just said, you can deface my statue. My literature is already written in the history books. I already wrote my own history. Thank you very much.
The only one I don't feel too bad about, I'll be honest with you, is Christopher Columbus.
Why?
What he did to the Native American population, it is not a very good point in history.
No, and I think the issue is at the end of the day, he's commemorated because he was the first, right? He was the first Europeanist to come over from the old world. He think that he does deserve at least that credence, right? It does take a man of incredible tenacity to be able to travel from a sea that no one has, from an ocean that no one has ever crossed before. To do that in and of itself is great. Now, am I saying that the man's character is wonderful? No. I mean, that goes back to every single major founder / major influential person in history. You will always find flaws with them. And it's okay that you, it's actually recommended that you do so because that means you read into them. That means you learned something.
I always take the example of Thomas Jefferson.
Sure.
Thomas Jefferson is the author of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
One of the most educated and eloquent of the founders.
Mm-hmm.
Became President of the United States, was probably one of the first figures who would stand up for states' rights. And at the same time, his mistress was a black slave. So no man is perfect, but you are not going to take away from him his merits as being a founding father, as being the author of the Declaration of Independence, of creating the framework of this beautiful country.
Well, not only that, I mean, again, you have to judge people based on their character. And back then, if you look at what everyone else was doing and what was consideration to society, you realize that he's actually quite a just like George Washington, who, by the way, would make sure that he moved around so that slaves, because in certain northern states, you weren't allowed to have slaves after a certain amount of time. So these men obviously had issues of their time that weren't resolved with the formation of our country and could not resolve them based on the on the understanding of life and the world that they lived in. But we can understand the integrity of a man. We do know that there are good moral associations to what a man does in its holistic view, like when you take the totality of information of one's life, right? So here's Thomas Jefferson, which you already know is one of my favorite presidents in my arena of famous presidents. Here's a man who is incredibly invigorated by the debate. He truly believes in what he is doing, and he is an organizer. I mean, almost every library system in the country uses his categorization of books. He is beyond belief. He was a Renaissance man to its core, just like and most of them were. So I think we need to take did he do bad? Did he have a mistress that was an African American slave? Yes. Did he have issues with slavery like any other plantation owning person had at the time? Absolutely. I'm not saying we should delete that. We shouldn't.
But you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Correct. And you can't, and don't delete that history either, right? I'm not saying we should not know that Jefferson had a mistress, right? I'm saying we should add that as part of his story, but don't make it the singular only thing to describe him as a man, because it obviously, just like everyone else, we're all a little complicated as far as how we define ourselves.
Well, and I think that if we were judged in the year 3020, we would be considered barbarians by what we believe in now.
I feel like we would be the old two men. We would be judged as the old two men from the Muppets. You know, the people who are up in the theater that are just complaining about everything that's going on.
Right, right. No, but that's true. I mean, you need to judge people by the standards and values of their time. They cannot be judged.
Well, and the other issue is that if we believe in evolution, if we believe in progress, then how do you get to progress and evolution if you don't have a starting point?
Absolutely.
You all have to start somewhere.
Absolutely. And you have to also admire society for the progress it's done.
Absolutely. And without question, it's a nationalist statement to say, hey, listen, first of all, the United States in its entirety has done bad things, okay, in its history. Do I feel that those bad things defined us? No. I think that what defines us is the content of what made us, what made our country to begin with, which is law, which is the Constitution, the oldest, and that it has survived decade after decade after tumultuous decisions and, you know, questionable acts after, right, and also righteous decisions and righteous acts. To suggest to me that every decision someone makes is wrong is, I mean, you really have to go out on a limb to say that, because there's no such thing as true, pure evil in my view.
Also, if you dissect any public figure's record, you're going to find imperfections.
Holy crap, yeah. I mean, Franklin was like a playboy.
Yes.
Benjamin Franklin was, and by the way, anyone who doesn't believe me, please read a biography of Benjamin Franklin. It's hilarious. He was the biggest playboy. He loved women. So if anyone wants a good read and a good laugh, please read any of his.
I think he was a smart one. He was like, I'm not going to be president. I'm just going to enjoy the advantages of being a founding father, and the rest, you know, Jefferson and Washington can do it.
Yeah, without, yeah, exactly. And let Adams keep screaming from the pulpit.
Well, on that note, Carlos, thank you so much for coming on this show. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into this bonus episode. Find us on Instagram at Right Owl Politics. You'll get the latest news from our podcast there. Remember, we have a new episode every Friday. Airs at 1 p.m. So don't miss it. Subscribe to your favorite podcast platform. And as always, comments, concerns, questions, please send us a message and we'll gladly put it in the show or address it on the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. So remember, we're not your dad's political news show. So spread the word. Tell your friends. Thanks, guys.